Good morning, y'all. Texas Homer broadcasting from Nana's house in San Marcos, Texas. And then we got Paul Wadlington somewhere in Colorado. We are going to talk Arch Manning's weapons from Paul's preview book, which is awesome. We'll talk about that in a second, too. Top SEC competition going on with Phil Steele's breakdown of top players. A lot of misses in there. I don't really know what's going on. And then we'll also talk about kind of the new recruiting world that we're in and what it means. First things first, Inside Texas, guys, only $1 to sign up all the way until the first game of the season versus Ohio State. New members only, of course. Join Inside Texas today for the best recruiting news, team news, analysis, all these articles you guys see us discuss on here. You can get them in depth and many, many more on InsideTexas.com. Only $1, guys. Paul, do you want to promote this or do you want me to give it a go?
You give it a go. You've done an awesome job. I listened to your thing with Eric, and you were phenomenal. You're better than I am.
Good stuff. Guys, our very own Paul Wadlington, sitting right next to me, released his 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, Thinking Texas Football, 13th annual. It is the best preview for Texas football. You're going to understand the team in a way that a lot of these preview magazines have no shot of doing. On top of that, there's SEC opponent breakdowns. There's a good piece on roster management and what the future looks like with a little shout out to OU. And then our own Eric Nahlin also did a recruiting piece. Guys, go to the link in the description. You can get the ebook version or you can get the print version. You need to buy Thinking Texas Football today. You absolutely won't regret it. Oh, wow.
This is the back.
Oh, you got some Taff in there, too. That's good stuff.
Taff looking like a boss after beating the Sooners.
Yeah, make sure to hook Paul up, man. That's a beast to write. And it emotionally damaged him for a little while. He's came back stronger. He's a resilient guy. But his headspace was definitely affected while he was in the weeds of writing that. And I appreciate that you do, man.
Good day, Roaster. And thank you, Splenda Daddy, for purchasing the prospectus.
Link in the description, guys. All right. Cool. So a couple of days ago, you did a macro recruiting thoughts piece, and I don't have my usual multi-screen setup here. So as I clunkily try to pull this up, we will see in a second. But this is written after Ojo to Tech. But can you see that yet? Let me see. Here we go. Now you can see it, right?
I can.
Good.
I got to be honest, man. I'm distracted by those beautiful curtains.
I know, dude. I was thinking of the setup. I was like, should I do a wood wall? Maybe green curtains?
You know what? Mom's got some sweet wood walls.
I was thinking maybe a beach-themed bathroom, dude. You know, change it up, dude.
Palm tree wallpaper.
Yeah, when you're at grandma's house, dude, you know the vibe.
Shell
dude.
Faucets. The faucets and shells. Yeah.
You know what's up. You know what's up, dude. All right, so...
back to you. Sorry.
This is the mission statement Paul has been preaching about the new NIL age, and it continues to come true. Paul, what is this powerful sentence and what does it mean?
In a pure bidding war, comma, you are at the mercy of your dumbest competitor. And the key to that phrase, that sentence is in a pure bidding war. So I say to that, people go, well, what about the college education and what about Austin? And it's like, buddy, listen to the sentence. In a pure bidding war, you're at the mercy of your dumbest competitor. And the fact is, there is a percentage of recruits where this is a pure bidding war. And you can talk about Texas's academic rankings, and you can talk about how Austin's awesome and cool and cutting edge, and Joe Rogan lives here now. That's all great. There is a certain percentage of recruits that it is a pure bidding war. How much are you offering? They're offering more. I'm going there. That's not all recruits, and some it's a blend. It's a melange of lots of different considerations, but you have to understand that there's a certain subset of recruits that this is just pure money. And in those instances, we are less likely to win, generally speaking, because we're not going to be the most desperate bidder at the table 9 times out of 10.
And a lot of times too, man, these are a marketing exercise, right? Yes. Tech timed that Ojo thing perfectly, right? Then they released that, you know, they're getting a prediction for the number one player in 2027, which likely means that someone at Tech fed information to someone to put it as a prediction. Therefore, Tech is really taking advantage of these past few days because now everyone's talking about them. So this was not only getting a player, it's a marketing strategy. So it's a billboard for all the other recruits. It's like, oh, wow, elite recruits can go here. So Tech also had some PR strategy behind this as well. And they liked the, you know, to us, we're like, they paid, you know, $5 million. We don't know what the number. It changes every 5 seconds, $2 million, $5 million, whatever. Tech doesn't mind when we put out, they paid $5 million for a player, because all the other players are like, they paid what? Yeah. So we end up actually doing their bidding for them when we do that. But Tech has been smart here. And I said in a post on the board, you know, there's going to be a few non-traditional teams that are going to rise in this era. And even though it's Tech, you got to give them props for at least trying, you know, to take this opportunity, because a lot of teams have just remained the same. And if you remain the same, you're going to get the same results. Tech is a like, look, man, I think there's opportunity here. Let's try to jump on it. The trick is, what's the downside to this, Paul? If you keep paying over market, it's going to catch up to you eventually. It's just when.
Well, so right now, I mean, if you believe the higher end of the figures quoted for Ojo, he's going to be making more comp than the starting five on the Texas Tech offensive line this season or next season when he arrives. That's tough on your locker room. Yeah, I hope Ojo is smart enough to keep his mouth shut, because there's a 23-year-old guy making about a tenth of what he's making who might stuff him into a trash can. So, you know, that can wreck your locker room. But the fact is, so what? They still got the player, and we didn't. So, you know, we're going to have to be a little bit more judicious in who we trust. And I will say one possible mistake that Tech made with the 2027 guy is it is great to get your name out there on the heels of this, and that was purposeful. But Tech is at its best when they're coming in late over the top.
Correct.
If you broadcast early on a guy that's 2027, some other desperate or competitor or bidder is going to find a way to meet or exceed your number, or everyone's just going to counter recruit the hell out of you and say, hey, look, we're not going to offer you the same that the Tech's offering you. That's bonkers. They haven't developed anyone. That's a fact. Joey McGuire's been there X number of years. Here's their NFL draft, blah, 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 blah. Right. And if you whittle away and it's multiple different schools, Texas, Georgia, Bama, all hitting these talking points, eventually you're going to sour on Tech. And it's not so much that you'll go with Alabama, it's that you'll go with someone else other than Tech. Right. The idea is not necessarily to win you, but to sour you on your current choice. So that is one advantage of Tech's strategy with Ojo is, hey, we made this deal. We're not even in your top four that you're listing and telling all the recruiting services. When he was telling people that and he was about to do his service, he already had a deal struck with Tech, and right, they knew he was committing. But they wanted to come in the best way. The best thing they could do was come in late and sort of over the top. They lose some of their competitive advantage when they telegraph some of this stuff.
100%. And it also, you know, there's going to be another Tech lurking out there that's going to realize that these are money recruitments. Okay, well, if we don't have to compete on, you know, academic success, on-field success, historical value, then okay, Rutgers now can offer that edge recruit, blah, 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 you know? So it's also that thing, too, whenever you telegraph a year in advance that it's a money recruitment, that can also entice another upstart to get in the mix there, too, if it's just purely about the money.
Also, if you air this stuff too much, too publicly, people are going to start putting together spreadsheets, and they're going to say, hey, you know what's interesting? Tech is $4.5 million over the salary cap that we all agree on. What's going on, Cody? So,
well, here's the thing too, man. We need to go in the NFL route. These caps need to be made public. It should be your whole roster. And also it gives us offseason stuff, Paul. Then we can talk about actual.
If you can just look at everyone's roster.
We can look at everyone's roster and price point. But
makes $32,000 a year.
Yeah, that's where it's
I'd pay him $140,000.
Yeah, there has to be some minimum amount people get paid, you know, type of thing. But to me too, man, it should just be a public regard. And a lot of these schools are public. Texas is not. It's athletic department is separate from the school functions, but most aren't. So there's that reality too. That's interesting. We got some fine hating in here in the chat.
Some good hating. Well, and yeah, one thing about the dumbest competitor thing, you could substitute the word irrational or you could substitute the word desperate. I don't care. But in the short term, dumb competitors hurt you.
For sure.
In the mid to long term, they often self-destruct. Right. But if you've got a hardware store and you've got a competitor down the road who's giving away free hammers with every purchase.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt your hammer sales. Eventually, maybe that hardware store down the street goes out of business. But in the short term, you're hurting.
Well, here's the tricky part, man. And someone pointed it out. When Tech got the RPM for the number one edge yesterday, I noticed Cody Campbell. He's the benefactor of Texas Tech. He owns Double Eagle. He's made billions from the Permian Basin oil. But I noticed Cody Campbell was active in the comments. He said he's not going anywhere anytime soon. Sounds like he's all in, definitely. So here's the thing. People got mad that he was talking mess, and I can agree. But, man, if you're a billionaire, why would you not? You know, it's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, fire me? So it's like, that's the thing, too. It's like, dude, if you're rich, you're like, yeah, I'm buying a team. Here's the thing, too, right? Sports fandom is irrational, generally. It doesn't matter if you make $1 or $1 billion. Cody Campbell owns a football team right now without any of the legal risk behind it, you know, and he has unlimited money there. He's not ROI in the fact that he wants wins for sure, but he's not going to hurt for money. He could buy a team every year and his accountant wouldn't say a thing. It would be another summer home.
5% of $1 billion is $50 million.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. His net worth isn't all in cash. Like, I was laughing. People, yeah. Elon Musk should, you know, buy this for $30 billion cash. He's worth, and it's like, dude, that guy, he can't put together $1 billion in cash right now.
He's going to leverage his assets. Yeah,
that's not how it works. But you can put together some cash if you need to. And the point is, this is a rounding error in his net worth.
Right. And he doesn't need to profit off, you know, kind of our thing is like, well, guess what? If they keep losing, he's not going to like it. It's like, yeah, but it doesn't mean he's going to stop spending. You know, it's T. Boone Pickens. It's Phil Knight at Oregon. Both those guys got fairly good results. And here's the reality. If they buy enough good players, as long as the culture stays intact, that's the tricky question. Tech will win. You know, they're in the Big 12, guys. Like, this is not a recruiting conference. If you have a couple 5 stars, 5 to 6, 4 stars, and your culture is okay. And also, they got Mac Leftwich at offensive coordinator. That's a great up-and-comer. I went to high school with him a bit. He's a cool dude. And they're bringing in good transfers. The reality is Tech will likely win because of this, barring some type of A&M implosion. So it's kind of wishful thinking because likely this will result in them at least being a contender in their conference. My question is, how willing are they going to be to assume when they don't see results after a few years? That's the thing with Cody Campbell as a billionaire. You know, it's fun to have a team.
If the infusion of talent isn't getting the results, you're going to change the coach. You're going to change that. That's the mix that changes.
Well, and here's the fun part. Guess who's going to be in charge of that coaching search? It's going to be the billionaire. That
I was going to say, the idea that the AD of Texas Tech would be in charge of that search is like hilarious, right? So.
Yeah.
Ultimately it'll be Campbell picking and hey, maybe the guy knows ball. I don't know.
Yeah. And remember there were talks to him to lead up the committee. And then Nick Saban, I love Nick Saban for this. They started immediately like, yeah, we need to get politicians involved and go national and let's bring a billionaire to run it. Nick Saban was like, nope, I'm good. And then immediately was like, this is not the answer. Bureaucracy is not the answer here. So shout out Saban for being like, I'm not going to be a part of that. But here's the reality that Tech is going to be on the scene and they're going to be on the scene for a while. And they also have a dastardly way of doing it where they're going to come in at the last second.
Dastardly.
Yeah, it is. And they're going to take your player. And so that's going to be annoying, to put it simply.
Well, it's going to be cyclical. So Texas just signed the number one recruiting class last year. There was going to be a natural pause anyway, right? Yeah. Because when you sign back-to-back top five classes, people can counter-recruit you and go, hey, man, Texas is loaded. If you think you're getting on the field as a freshman, you're full of it, right?
Yeah.
And so there's that natural counterweight, which is just the natural rhythm of recruiting. Yeah. But also, a lot of our money is tied up in retention.
Correct. So it's a so, somebody was saying, like, I don't know, 80% to 90% is going to stick on your roster. And then you only have, you know, 20 to 10% for your recruits. And the better your roster is, the harder that becomes to spend on recruits. Cause, you know, Colin Simmons got to eat, Anthony Hill's got to eat. So that's reality too, is these good teams have to defend more than, you know, Tech, cause no one's trying to steal Tech's three stars, you know?
So have you noticed Auburn had this big precipitous drop in recruiting rankings?
Yeah.
Their fans are going nuts. Well, that's a direct consequence of the fact that they paid up through the portal. And they went and got Jackson Arnold and Eric Singleton and a bunch of other players that were pricey. And so now Auburn, who was outbidding people, they can't outbid people right now because it's tied up in the roster. So that's just, there's going to be a natural ebb and flow to some of this that's going to be a little disconcerting. And, you know, I don't know how you make people adhere to the salary cap.
So here's what I was going to say. So doesn't Texas have 10 or 15 billionaires that can make Tech look bad in dollars for recruiting? First off, no, because there's only 33 billionaires in the United States. It'd be nice if Texas had half of them. But, you know, there's a few. So this is going to be the issue is that, and we're not saying this because we don't know the structure of their program or the deal, but the suspicion is that maybe it's not all salary cap here. And once again, I don't know that. But if there's anything that's not with the rules, Texas shies away from that generally. And I wish I was just saying that to protect Texas and we were secretly dirty. Unfortunately, unfortunately, Texas plays by the rules. And that's not always great in this world. So I
would say this. There actually are several hundred billionaires in the U.S.
Okay. I don't know why I got 33.
Texas does have several, but doesn't mean they're interested in football. I mean, it's just you have to have a particular interest that that's your ego thing. And for some billionaires, it's, well, that's nonsense. Why would I just throw away that money? That's, I mean, I don't care about that. So.
And the money has gone more to the rich guys because they're not being asked as much to do facilities. So that was a thing. But here's the reality. The 501c3 concept is dead. So you don't get a tax break either. Mm-hmm. So that was a good way to do it. And motivation matters, right? T. Boone Pickens loves football. And some of our benefactors that we had that loved football, they aged out. You know, we had 95-year-old rich guys at one point. Well, a bunch of them.
They also prefer to have their name on a facility or a building.
Right.
Right. They don't want to have money.
The medical school sounds cooler than.
Well, like my name lives forever. Like when you reach a certain age, you're more concerned about legacy than baubles, right? You know, oh, my yacht is worth $75 million. Like they don't care after a while. What they care about is legacy. My name is on the UT Business School for in perpetuity. But
Red McCombs, yeah.
Paying Anthony Hill, that doesn't live forever.
But it does, Paul.
It does, in my mind.
Because you should really have the player's last name and then whatever billionaire's last name brought Anthony Hill brought to you by Red.
Every time he makes a play, it should say brought to you by.
Yeah. Yeah. That's 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I wish by me.
This interception nice. Return brought to you by.
Yeah. So that's the tricky part that we're kind of dealing with here that motivated stuff matters. And then, House certainly set, yes. Let me see. Somebody said it doesn't. The House sets a base, not a cap. It does set a cap, theoretically. Everyone in the SEC is going to have to rev share. What was it? I don't know, 20 million, whatever. And then you can divvy up how it goes to other sports. But there is a payment that legally you have to share with the players. It doesn't mean that your NIL structure behind the scenes, which I imagine is how other teams are doing it, can't be involved. So that's going to be the tricky part going forward. But I also want to talk about, we talked about Tech enough here. Before we go to the next little portion, I want to talk about Notre Dame and Florida because we just keep landing in battles with these guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're trading blows here because Notre Dame's getting some guys, so is Florida, and we're doing the same. But before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
Yeah, baby. Back to school. Get hype, y'all. Okay, Paul, quick thing. What's going on? Why are we in these battles with Notre Dame and Florida all the time now?
Good question. I think we have similar tastes, and there's a couple of other things that are going on. So we have realized, because we're in the SEC, we can now recruit the state of Florida pretty credibly. We can also recruit Georgia and Louisiana credibly, right? Florida is the most Texas-like school in Florida. And Florida realizes that now that we've joined the SEC, in addition to A&M, they can recruit Texas credibly and tell guys, hey, you're going to be playing games in Texas. You're going to be on TV in Texas, blah, 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 blah. And what we realize is we profile very similar athletic profiles to Florida. We like the same kinds of players, as does Notre Dame. Notre Dame, under Marcus Freeman, has realized, hey, we're a national recruiter, and the most athletic people are in Georgia, Texas, and Florida, so we're going there, and we're going to compete. And it turns out when we say, like, for example, Eric Nalin will say, hey, this guy's like a Texas guy, and we kind of know what that means, yeah. Right? Just understand that this guy is a Texas guy on a Notre Dame board means this guy's a Notre Dame guy.
Right.
It's the same qualities. It's the same athletic character. Same, like, no-nonsense guys who aren't about foolishness, right?
Academics are there. Prestige is there.
And we're having a huge overlap with Notre Dame and Florida. And the problem is both Notre Dame and Florida have a pretty good value proposition, right? And they're both led by coaches who can really recruit, and they emphasize recruiting. Freeman is super charismatic, and Napier is a really good recruiter from what I've heard, and has a staff that can really recruit. So we are going to compete with these guys in Texas. We're going to compete with them in Florida. And we're going to compete with them on the neutral grounds of Louisiana and Georgia, in addition to LSU and Georgia, as if that's not hard enough, right?
Right.
And then you got Auburn and Florida State and Clemson and all these other schools, right? Ohio State, of course, is going to go get their speed down there too. So that's what's going on, but that is kind of a new thing. I mean, we've occasionally overlapped with Notre Dame on guys before, but not really till Marcus Freeman got there in earnest did we have these constant overlaps. And you may notice these constant overlaps with Florida, and they're beating us for guys, and we're beating them for guys. So it's kind of irritating, and I have a feeling, I haven't talked to Eric about it, but I bet he's forged a relationship with some Florida guys because –
You have to.
That's how you reach out and go, hey, what do you think on this recruit? What are you guys hearing? Because they're probably doing the same
thing. Yeah, when you're in battles with another team, the recruiting guys get together because they want to share notes because one of them can probably suss out if it's going to be them or not. That's going to be the trick. Austin has to do a lot of work in those battles. Gainesville and South Bend are not on the same level. But also that can be a flip side, right? How many people choose to live in the suburbs and not Dallas, right? So there's some people that the city is not necessarily the selling point. And can be overwhelming. You know, we'll talk about whenever we'd be in battles with OU, some people want to be in Norman. The big city is just whatever doesn't match their internal cadence.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then also, that said, South Bend's kind of a dump. Notre Dame's campus is really nice, but Gainesville is pretty cool. It's like a college town, like a small city, large town, college town, like Florida is like the centerpiece of everything. Some people really like that. So,
and Florida's academics are nothing to shake a stick at either. They do
Texas of Florida.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is these schools that are profiling just the same way. Now it just comes down to which colors do you like?
Yeah,
and like which city. Yeah. So being in Austin is great. You're in the hub, but a lot of the great teams historically in college football are in these suburbs. So some people just like the vibe better. For instance, I like being in Austin. I like the hum of a city. My wife doesn't, you know, so it's just, it all depends if you're more in country mode or city mode too. So it can work against you.
The one thing I think Sark does a great job of selling the idea of not just Austin as cool city and all that, but hey, this is a thriving, humming economy.
Correct.
And within that economy, this is the largest city that doesn't have a pro team of any sort, Austin, Texas. And you are the pro team of Austin. Mm-hmm. And even the so-called t-shirt fans, right? People that just love Texas, that live in Austin, they didn't go to UT. They want to represent you and do business with you and sponsor you. And there's all sorts of versions of that, ranging freaking
Lamborghini
company in Austin,
yeah,
to your local hardware store, right? So
yeah, that's the big thing, is Austin does have more money infrastructure, right? There's marketing agencies, there's the money's already hanging around. You can pick it up easier in Austin, but yeah, so that's the fun world of recruiting, right? You're going to have the young upstarts. I know it's annoying that it's Tech, but I still have to give props to them for at least trying, man. It's like, we're basically saying, like, you must live in mediocrity. Know your place, Texas Tech. And at least they're trying, you know?
Right.
And then you have the traditional powers like Notre Dame and Florida, who profile very similarly to us from school-wise and all that stuff. So they're going to continue. And like Paul said, man, Notre Dame's athletes right now don't look like Notre Dame. It's athletes. They're known for, like, man, this three-star, they really made it work. That's not what's happening right now in Notre Dame. They're getting the athletes. They're not having to value shop everything right now.
Well, and realize that the hierarchy of college football is not written in permanent ink. And we're talking about the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Florida Gators have no real football history until around the same time, and I was young when this all happened, but I remember it. Around the same time, more or less, Florida State, Miami, and Florida all erupted. Okay? All within about 5 years of each other. And Miami was a backwater. That was an irrelevant college football program. Florida State was totally irrelevant. Bobby Bowden invented football there, more or less. And then Florida was, I mean, they had Steve Spurrier win the Heisman. That was like the highlight of Florida Gator football for 40 years. They were irrelevant. They all erupt because of a bunch of demographic shifts and wealth getting finally poured into some areas with facilities and all this kind of stuff. And people just started caring about football more. And suddenly these three schools, I mean, these are three top, 15 programs now?
Yeah.
40 years ago, they weren't in the top 35. So
anytime I see the student population of Miami or look at the size of their stadium, it blows my mind, because you know, I grew up after the U, so to me the U always, I was like, man, it's got to be 100,000 people, you know, it's Miami, you know, it's the city of Miami, you know. And then you realize, you're like, dude, they can't pack a 30,000 cap stadium. And like, it's Miami's a strange success story in that regard, because their
stadium's nowhere near their campus.
Yeah, I know. Where are they at?
Miami does recruiting trips. They don't go to Coral Gables. They take them to Miami Beach.
Yeah.
Which is like taking someone to San Marcos or New Braunfels if you're visiting Austin.
Yeah.
Like,
shout out San Marcos. Yeah, that's Miami always trips me out, because to me, they're such a bigger factor in my mind, you know? All right. I can tell you, quietly pulling up your book on my iPhone.
All right.
So we can talk Arch Manning's weapons here.
Let's party.
So we want to talk about what Arch Manning has at his disposal. And you guys make sure to pick up the preview, because you're going to be missing a lot of good stuff, because we're not hitting it all.
When you open up to different sections.
Yep. And so we're going to start with wide receiver here, and I have my list of names.
All right. Without looking. Do not look down. How many scholarship wide receivers do we have?
All right. Moore, McCutcheon.
Oh, God. You're going to name them all?
I have to.
All right.
Mosley, Livingston, Aaron Butler, Kalik Lockett, Jamie French, Ryan Wingo. I feel like I'm missing one. Is there another freshman I'm missing? I don't know. Eight?
9.
Who am I missing?
Did you say Parker Livingstone?
Yeah, I did. I think I said Aaron Butler. I think I said Butler. Michael Terry is who I missed on.
Oh, here, Terry. But, yeah, it's easy to forget about him.
But I don't count Michael Terry because to me, he's just like this cool tweener. You know, like what is he going to be? Like a tight end receiver.
We got to respect it for now.
We got to. But he's, yeah, to me,
he's 25 in about a year. But
yeah.
So 9. Do you remember the Herman days?
Yeah, we'd have like 18 and I hadn't heard half of them. You wouldn't even know who half of them were.
And like only 2 of them could play.
Yeah.
I mean.
And we'd be like, dude, this room is so deep. Someone has to rise. And
can you imagine the bitching in that room with that many wide receivers not getting the ball?
Yeah. Oh, not even close. Not even the thought that they would be able to get a pass.
I think Sark keeps a small wide receiver room, not just because it allows you to load up on the line of scrimmage, but I think it just improves your locker room chemistry.
You can sleep better. You can sleep better at night.
Exactly.
Yeah. So those are the guys.
Those are the guys. Paul,
what do you think about these guys? Let's start with the projected starting lineup. Let's start with Wingo. I want to start with Wingo here. What was your analysis of Ryan Wingo last season, his abilities, his weaknesses, and then what we need to see going forward for the young man?
So if you guys will recall, he was probably what? Would you say he's our fourth option, fifth option in the passing offense last year?
Yeah, he would just show up for like an end around or whatever and look incredible. And then look incredible.
Or screen.
Yeah, like, yeah, just run the over. Play athlete, you know?
Yeah, you just nailed it. So he played athlete, and he's got skills. He's got good hands. Mm-hmm. He's a hard worker. But he's a great athlete learning to play wide receiver. And so I think the key is, can he bridge the gap from screen and slant guy, physical marvel, does an end around, you know, breaks 3 tackles, runs for 20 yards.
Yeah, like, whoa, look at that guy.
Can he break from that mold, which is actually very valuable, to being the dude outside that threatens everyone, that scares defensive coordinators, that says we got to run cover two, right? If he can be that guy, and I've been hearing great reports about him, the work ethic is not an issue and the physical traits are not an issue. If he can be that guy, beat press coverage or even beat zone coverage, right? And recognize it, understand the spots to settle in. That's going to be a massive asset for us. And he is going to take the SEC by storm. I mean, he's going to be mentioned in the same breath as Ryan Williams and all these other guys that get all the attention. So that's what we need from him, is to be not just a great athlete, but a great athlete that's a receiver, beating people outside. That's the key. He can't just be a screen and slant guy.
Well, there's even some schematic issues that he would have, right? So there's a concept in football called a must outside release fade route, meaning that no matter what, the receiver has to go outside because you're trying to turn the back of the corner, make the corner not pay attention and or irrelevant so something else can get open. And there would be times where I'm like, this is clearly should be a must outside release and Wingo's just, you know, going wherever. So there's just little things like that that are going to matter with him. Now, here's the difference. I've been rewatching all the games. And man, just Quinn couldn't really create much out of concept. Like Quinn just needed a billboard sign of being like, here is the route. This guy is now open. No one's near him.
Here is the lead.
Exactly. And so it's like, and that wasn't great for Wingo, right? When you have that athlete. Arch is different. Arch knows how to work back to you. Arch will be able to get Wingo the ball in ways that Quinn couldn't. Say Wingo doesn't even improve. Arch will just be better at that in general, which is really important. Because I was watching A&M, he catches that deep over and then turns up. But he had to be wide open and they had to bust on him for Quinn to even try it. So that's the big thing that's going to be interesting with Wingo. But if he can do his releases, and Sark is hard on his receivers, he's not from the air raid philosophy where it's just like, hey man, find space, get open, we're going to play backyard ball. Like Sark is like, you have to be here at this time, so this route is timed up and we can do it. I mean, these concepts are super timing based and it's not friendly on the non-skilled receiver, even if they're a special athlete. So that's the big thing for Wingo. Hurt his hamstring. That was a bummer, but he came back at the end. Eric said yesterday that all the defensive coaches were like, thank God we didn't have to defend him during spring.
Yeah,
because he's special, man. So that's the big thing with Wingo. He's coming into year two. All the traits are there. All the NFL ability is there. Just playing the position down to a T is going to be the difference there.
Well, so he's got to win down the field. Yep. We know he can win up the field, right? Yep. Flip it out to him. He's a running back. I mean, like, he's hard to tackle. He's harder to tackle than some of our running backs, frankly. But we got to get him to also win down the field, right? That's what's going to open everything up. We can't just be a horizontal offense. And obviously, Arch Manning does not want to participate in just a horizontal offense.
Oh, he's going to give Wingo a shot too, man.
He's going to give everybody shots.
If it's one-on-one, he's going to throw it. Now it's up to Wingo to come down with it, you know?
Yeah.
That's going to be the big thing. So that's the thing with Wingo. We know how special he is. Can he do all the little things right at wide receiver? And also, that's development, right? That's what Chris Jackson does. He was an NFL coach. And that's what the NFL wants to see. You know, Wingo's getting drafted, whatever. But if you bring skill to it too, man, you saw what Golden was able to do with skill. That put him in the first round.
I like Chris Jackson.
So do I. And I like his receiver style. I like his takes. And I like how he thinks about the position.
Yeah. And I like that he's not pouty about having a slim wide receiver room, right?
Yeah.
I think he just views it as great. I've got no excess baggage that I have to worry about. All these guys can get their reps. I can really evaluate them. And then, frankly, we can move on from some of these guys, or we can hit the portal, or we can do whatever we need to do. I just like that approach. So the guy that's going to compliment Wingo is inside.
DeAndre Moore.
So DeAndre Moore, valuable asset for us last year. Kind of hit or miss. He caught 7 touchdowns, Connor. Did you realize that?
Yeah, but it kind of comes in waves, right? You would catch a touchdown and be like, hell yeah, Moore. And then he would drop something and you'd be like, damn.
So let's talk about the 2 games where he really went off, because it's instructive. First, Mississippi State. Uh-huh. 4 catches, 104 yards, multiple catches down the field, running that little slot fade, little out and ups.
And who was his quarterback?
Who was his quarterback? Arch Manning. That unlocked an aspect of DeAndre Moore's game that he could not unlock otherwise. What was his other big game? Do you remember?
Georgia 2,
SEC title game. He had 9 catches, 114 yards, that big touchdown catch, mostly on RPOs. So what they realized is, hey, Quinn's starting. Sark had a much better game plan in Georgia 2 than Georgia 1. And at least we knew what to expect. And they said, all right, here's what we're going to do outside to attack them. But DeAndre, you and Quinn are just going to run RPO, 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 want, like, time and time again to discourage Georgia from bringing those backers, right? And we really made hay off of that. So I think this year is going to look like a combination of that. It's going to be a bunch of RPOs with Arch, pitch and catch, short distances, or 10 to 12 yards, and then a ton of slot fade, slot over fade, and just letting DeAndre run. And I think it's going to be really, really good for him. I think it's going to unlock him.
Yeah, and remember, I say it all the time, but one of the first videos, you know, that came on in Instagram stories or whatever was Arch throwing fades to DeAndre Moore, like as soon as he got on campus. So those two have had a connection early as well. And that matters, man, who your quarterbacks are comfortable with.
Yep.
So that's going to be the big thing from where we thought potentially, hey, why not? Because he has good, great speed. Why not move him outside, move the reliable Mosley to the slot? But that's not the case, because what Paul's saying is, like, whenever they're saying we're keeping Moore in the slot, that's what we're hearing. We're hearing slot fade. We're hearing matching up more with nickels and safeties. So you should expect deep if you're trying to put a receiver that fast against nickels and safeties.
So what a lot of people do is, I talk about the big nickel thing, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of teams play a big nickel, and you play a big nickel to basically guard against the run. You set the edge with a guy who's 215, 220. And you bring him as a blitzer because he's the closest guy that can blitz to the quarterback that might be unexpected, right?
Yeah.
The downside of that is if they've got a pretty effective slot receiver who can go deep on you, you better cover that nickel. You uh-huh. always got to have a safety over him. We did that with Gilbo more often than not, right? The problem with that is now you're opening some stuff up for Wingo. You're opening stuff up for Jack Andres, you know, running across that, right? You're opening up stuff for just flipping it out to Wisner in the flat.
And Mosley, right? If they're on the same side and you take that nickel and that safety, Mosley's one-on-one.
Suddenly you're doing screen game stuff, right? And then you got Wingo and Mosley blocking out there for each other, right?
Yeah.
You get into all these problems, and that's what Sark is trying to create of, hey, whatever you choose to do in your coverage, it's we can make it wrong. And that's where Arch is going to be an upgrade at quarterback. You know, people look at the physical aspects, and those are upgrades, obviously. But he's a better processor. He just is. Now, he needs the experience to make sure that his processing is true, right? But he just is a better processor. And he's going to be able to get to those second and third options much more adeptly.
Yeah. Is it possible that Moore is just a more technical route runner than Mosley, and it benefits him more to have the two-way go out of the slot or just for slot fade? So one thing is Moore is just faster than Mosley.
He's just faster, yeah.
He's just faster. And so if you can have him on the slot, you can get two for one with DeAndre Moore. You could neutralize a nickel and a safety. If he's outside, you're matching up with a corner. I would have to look at the route running specifically, to be honest with you. I haven't really paid attention to who's the more technical route runner. But Mosley's also has great consistency. And consistency generally lends to skill if you're not fast, because your steps have to be right. But that's just my gut feeling there on why.
I'll tell you Mosley's strength. I've watched every catch he's made as a college football player. He's great at settling into space against zone or combo coverages. And if you like that about Jordan Whittington, Mosley duplicates a lot of that. He doesn't quite have the giddy up that Whittington does, but Mosley, he's a weird athlete, Connor, because we always equate athleticism in football to just like gross measurables. What's your vertical? What's your 40? How explosive are you? There's another aspect of athleticism, which is kind of your hand-eye coordination, your ability to just stop, like your ability to decelerate, not just accelerate. And it's pretty clear from watching Mosley that he's just really coordinated and he's got good body control. And so even contested catches, Jack Andres has the same thing. Yeah. He wins contested balls in like tight spaces. And then he turns up and runs with it. And he's not running a 4.340 when he does, but you committed to the ball. He committed to the ball. He snatches it out of the air.
You're shakes still landing.
Off, and he still gets 20 yards, right? He's a football player. So that's going to be the interesting thing about him. Here's the other thing. His last three games as a Stanford Cardinal. Do you know what his stat lines were?
I think you wrote it in the book that he came on strong at the end. I learned it from you.
I learned it from you, Dad. His last three cumulative stat games, including the big upset of Louisville, 26 catches, 332 yards, and 5 touchdowns in 3 games.
So towards the end, so got better.
Over 100 yards per game, 5 touchdowns, including 168 yards and 3 touchdowns against Louisville.
And that quarterback couldn't throw to save his life either.
Ashton, oh my God. I mean, like,
dude is brutal.
His windup was like, I'm going to throw now.
Yeah, it was bad.
And so the point is, this guy might have peaked late. Like, it all came together for him as a true freshman. So we kind of are pretending like we know what Mosley is. I'm not sure we know what Mosley is as a sophomore. I mean, we're going to find out.
I've always equated greater speed to greater long speed to be an outside receiver with short area quickness helping more out of the slot. And yeah, 100% it can happen. Here's the thing. If we're talking a slot fade, it's a smash concept. All that means, for people that don't know, is that the outside receiver, it would be Mosley in this situation, is going to run a little hitch. He's going to try to make the corner bite down on him, and then the slot is going to come behind him on a corner route, and that's going to be the advantage. If you have to choose between a slower guy and a faster guy, you're going to want the slower guy to run the hitch and the faster guy to run the corner. So that's a reason. And also, too, Sark runs a ton of overs, right? And generally, when you see wide receivers split close to the line, they're either going to break out, they're creating space to break out, but most of the time, it means that they're working them closer on a deep over, and Moore is going to be able to run a deep over quicker than Mosley. So it could be system dependent, but generally this does hold true. The faster, shiftier are the shiftier guys in the slot, longer speed outside. But for these concepts and this offense, It can go either way. I'm down with Moore being outside. We thought maybe he would be, but it's whenever they did put him in the slot, they're kind of telling us how they want these routes run.
Yeah, and the thing about Mosley is don't underestimate the value of a guy with good hands who runs the right route.
Correct.
That's your number four target.
Yeah.
Like, that guy moves chains. You know, people are always like, well, I want three 40 guys. And it's like, well, that's probably one too many because they all want to run the same routes and they all want to do the same stuff, right?
And they're all going to get there at the same time, which is not layering, which is not layering your offense, you know?
But as a wide receiver core, you kind of want a basketball team, different sizes, yeah, different shapes, sure, right? And then that said, there's some multiplicity here. Parker Livingstone, we know, can win deep balls outside. We think we know that. We'll find out. So he may get more run against certain opponents than Mosley.
Yeah, and Arch can get to Mosley. So this is what would drive me nuts about Quinn. I get really frustrating watching Quinn when I go back. So Quinn would basically – Sark would have the number one concept deep down the field. If it wouldn't be open, Quinn was not reading. What Quinn would do would go to number one, and he would go straight to the checkdown. Yes, his eyes would technically move across the field to the checkdown. He wasn't reading. He would just go, one's not there, outlet. And Arch doesn't do that. I've seen Arch work the formation – nothing's there and come back across the formation. That's NFL quarterback stuff. And so that's the thing too, is Arch will be able to get to Mosley if the first three aren't there. And if once he, Homer has to be, yeah, I really do, man. I get visibly frustrated rewatching the season. But that's the big thing too. And then once he makes these third down conversions, once he mosses that guy in the end zone, Arch is going to know he can trust him too. And then he's going to look for him even more. So I think Mosley, to me, injuries and Mosley are going to be fan favorites because they're going to show up when you need them to show up.
Arch is going to throw 50-50 balls. If the receivers turn them into 70-30s, Arch is going to keep throwing them.
For sure.
And he doesn't really care about double coverage because he thinks he can drop it in there.
So. Yeah. What did Peyton Manning say? He was like, Arch makes throws I could never make. And it's like, I'm like, is that a compliment? And then, but it was in that situation of like, he's like, he'll throw stuff that my arm said no. And if you watch him in high school, what I loved about his tape, first off, his huddle was every single throw he made, meaning that you got to watch what Arch looks like on a quick out versus a huddle tape that's just the quarterback throwing post the whole time. They showed you his full game, but if you would notice, he's throwing in condensed space in the red zone into the interior and dotting dudes up. That's how you win in the red zone. And we didn't have that once again with my post-traumatic Quinn disorder. Paul, before we keep going, we need to talk about another elite guy.
No trauma involved with this phone call.
Yep.
Dial this number, 832-557-1095. That is the number to Mr. Gabe Winslow. And y'all, it's summer. It's time to move. It's time to refi or it's time to move. You got to call this guy. You got to get him in your corner. Best damn mortgage guy in the great state of Texas. He's currently texting me from San Diego, California, because he's on another freaking award trip. Because this guy freaking dominates and he does more volume than like entire groups of mortgage guys. He's a one-man gang. And there's a reason he's an independent broker. Why? Because he can go to 60 different lenders and shop your deal and make them bid against each other. When you go to Big Bank USA, they bid you against
themselves.
Well, that's right. And yeah, they work. There's a reason they have a term called banker's hours, folks, and it's not a compliment. Gabe, he works broker's hours, which means you call him at midnight, he'll get out of bed, pick up the phone, and talk to you. Don't just call him midnight for anyone.
I'm going to say, I'm sure he loves when you say that.
You know what? He does, because he knows the quality of viewer that we have. He knows the quality of the Inside Texas connoisseur, and he welcomes you, and that's why he advertises here. Take care of this guy, because he's going to take care of you. 832-557-1095.
All right, we'll go a little bit quicker through the non-starters, and then we'll hit tight end kind of separately real quick. Okay, so we know that Daylon McCutchen, since day one, since he stepped on the field, has been getting rave reviews. He's going to be the starter once Moore leaves. They expect Moore to go to the NFL this year. They love McCutchen. They love his mindset. They love his speed. What's crazy is he was the one that wasn't the five-star in this last haul, and he's the one. Now, also, he's only one spot removed, for instance, so, like, he's right behind Moore, so he's going to get more play in practice, right? A Lockett and a French are stacked lower, so they don't get as much opportunity, but that's the big thing there. So be on the lookout for Dalen McCutchen to even get rotated in this season, but going forward, the future is very bright for Dalen McCutchen in the slot. Now let's talk the gang of five stars. Lockett, French, Terry.
So let's start with Lockett and French. I think they're going to be good. I don't think that these are like Xavier Worthy type guys who are going to come in, and partly because of necessity, but also just because of how overwhelmingly good they are. They just demand to be on the field. I think there's a pretty clear hierarchy. Neither of these guys has beaten out Ryan Wingo.
Right.
Or DeAndre Moore, for that matter. Although McCutchen's the guy backing him up. And I don't think they're going to beat out Mosley or Living. You know, maybe Livingstone. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll talk Livingstone last because he's exciting.
Okay. Well, so I think they're going to play. I don't think this is like going to be a rotation or, you know, anything like that. Like, I think they'll play when Texas is winning 31-7. You know, they'll get in the game and they'll get some run. Terry is really intriguing. He's 220 right now, man. And he's got a big frame. He's very athletic. If he stops now, he could stay at wide receiver. If he doesn't, he's a tight end. Or he's a linebacker, potentially, right? Depending on if he wants to do that. But this is a guy who could be added to the tight end room at 240, still running like a deer. And with after the catch yak ability, right? So he could be really interesting. I'd say give him a year and his body will tell you where he's going to go.
Man, I think Michael Terry should play the Michael Terry position. You know, like I hope to see Stark using him creatively. Cause like I said, this is wide receiver traits blended with tight end traits, blended with running back traits.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, what would Shanahan try to do with this style of player? He would create a role. You know, and so it's like, that's what I would be excited to. I want to see Michael Terry play Michael Terry.
Shanahan would create a role for him, feed him the ball, ramp up his stock, and then trade him for a defensive lineman.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but that's what I'm excited about with Michael Terry. I like this frustrates some of the personnel guys because when they're not clear fits, well, it's like, great, man. The defense isn't going to know what the hell to do either, right? If we don't know what to do, they definitely don't know what to do. So, I want to see Sark get creative with Michael Terry because he has he's a better receiver than a safety guarding a tight end would think. He has more bulk than a corner would expect. And then he moves like a running back. Put him in the backfield, man. Make him like a fullback that can also catch wheels, you know? So there's a lot of matchup stuff. If he gets matched up with a linebacker, that's a mismatch if he's in the backfield. So everywhere he goes, you could kind of break his proxy on the defense in a different way.
Yeah, I like the way that way of thinking. They're going to do similar things with Ryan Niblett, who's officially a running back now and practicing in that room. He'll be used like Keelan Robinson, like, but maybe even more so, meaning he's out there to catch the football.
Yeah, and Eric reported on Monday that he caught this, I think it was a sick corner route in the end zone and went up and got it and looked like a wide receiver.
Contrary to some popular opinion, they're not moving him around position to position to drive him off.
No, they're trying to force
position to be like, this guy's really good. We don't know how best to use him.
Yeah.
So,
So Niblett's not, pay attention to Niblett kind of in the running back room, but with wide receiver traits. So we have those, Michael Terry. Let's talk Aaron Butler. Aaron Butler's in a weird spot in the mix. I like Aaron Butler. So we just have to figure out kind of where he fits. Is his understanding of the offense solid? We know the athleticism's there. So it's hopefully he doesn't get shuffled out here. He's going to have to really show the coaches why he needs to start. But Butler's kind of in a weird limbo right now.
He profiled as a recruit, as a guy, as like, I don't know about this.
Yeah,
kind of screamed flake, right? He'd committed to two other schools before he committed to us. And when he committed to us, he'd never been to visit Austin.
Right.
And so when you see that, you're sort of like, all right. And then He's still around. You know, yeah. Sark and Chris Jackson aren't shy about showing a receiver the door if things aren't working out.
Yeah.
The one thing I have heard is that Butler needs to kind of get up on his playbook a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Sark just won't play you if you don't know where to go.
He's so strict on the wide. It's the most strict position he has. He doesn't play around.
He's meaner to the quarterback. That's the only position he's meaner
to. He's meaner to the quarterback, but it's like the quarterback still gets to play, you know? So it's like.
That's right.
Yeah, you get yanked if you do something stupid on
the wide receiver. The thing I like about Butler is he's one of these wiry, skinny guys who's, you know, like the Xavier Worthy, Allen Iverson mold, where they're way stronger than they should be for their size.
Yeah.
And kind of durable. Like, even though they weigh like 160, 170, you can't really hurt them.
Yeah.
They're just this weird, like, bendy, like, all sinew and muscle little structure. And you're like, oh, this guy better get up to 190 or he's going to get hurt. And it's like, not really. They just have that weird wiry frame. And they're always hard to tackle. Like, it's really weird. I think Butler has that. I think he can run. Someone in the chat said CeeDee Lamb. That is a great comp for the college. The NFL CeeDee Lamb actually put on some weight finally. But that's a great comp. Just hard to get on the ground. It was like weird, wiry, strong, and like kind of slippery. So that's the deal with Butler. He's going to determine his playing time based on his knowledge of the playbook, period.
And then I wanted to end with Parker Livingstone. So outside receiver, great long speed. I can't remember what his 200 meter was.
Me too.
So it's going to be funny when we switch it up because you're going to have Mosley, who's not as fast, and then the corner's going to be like, you know, stereotype Livingstone. They're like, oh, this is going to be a sneaky athlete here, and Livingstone's going to run a fade on him, and it's going to be awesome. You know, if Mosley didn't get brought in, Livingstone's your starter. And so that's the reality, is that Livingstone is going to be a baller. He's going to be a baller for the future as well, and I can't wait to watch what he's able to do this season because he's that fourth guy, so he will get some play and some reps. So be excited for Livingstone. Everyone else is. And if you remember the early spring reports, I mean, everybody was talking about him. So that's the big part with the outside receiver, Parker Livingstone.
Yeah, his superpower is he can make contested catches at weird angles. And like he has a big catch radius because he's long. He's like 6'3", 6'4", with long arms. And he can just make weird catches. He did it all through high school. He's doing it in practice at Texas, and he doesn't really necessarily have to be open. You just kind of throw it up to him, and he gets the ball. I think the main thing that he's going to have to work on is when you're tall, and particularly you have a long torso, you present a big target to the corner at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And if they can get their hands on you, they can kind of retard your ability to run your route the way you want to run it. Or they can get on your hip if it's a more mature, like physical college corner, and they kind of bully you off your line. If he can come up with some techniques to get over that and get through that, as long as he gets down the field on time, he's a guy you could throw it up to. And he makes weird catches. It's hard to explain, but you know, the people that have told me about it is like, it's what you saw in high school. He makes catches. And he can track the ball, and he tracks it late, so he doesn't show his hands early, like looking for the ball. He's just running, and then he goes like that. And the guy's like, whoa, is there a ball? Like, the defender doesn't even know to play through his hands.
Well, he's gonna have the step too, right, because of the long speed, right? So the quarterback's going to want to throw it too because he's going to have the step on that corner. So that matters as well. You know, if you're contested but the corner's always got you locked up, who cares? He has the speed to make the quarterback throw it and then the contestability to go up and win it. Okay, that's wide receivers. We'll talk quickly through tight end. We want to start with Jack Injuries. Paul has very strong opinions on if he can go for 60 yards or not. But the big thing with Injuries was safety blanket, man. 90% plus catch rate, which is incredible. Able to settle down in the zone. He's going to be, like I said with Mosley, he's going to be that guy on third down that's going to be a quarterback's best friend, and that's going to be the biggest thing. Paul points out, though, that he doesn't have the downfield athleticism of a Sanders or Helm, so you won't see as many hurdles, which I saw again last night versus Texas Tech with Helm. He was looking for those hurdles, dude. But that's the thing with injuries is even if that's the case, it doesn't matter. He's going to be converting. And Sark also schemes these dudes up. You don't got to worry about breaking tackles if no one's near you when you catch the ball.
He's very good at having the tight end show up in spots that the defense did not expect. And Andries is really good at that too. He sniffs out space. He got here late, I think May, June. They apparently learned the playbook in like a week. So he was a walk-on at Cal. And obviously,
which I like.
Abilities. Yeah, you got to love it. He's hungry. Yeah. He had 91 catches for 1,031 yards the last 2 years combined at Cal. Last year, he was Cal's number one receiver, partly because he's good, partly because their wide receiver room was horrific, like just terrible. So in a weird way, he's going to feel like this sense of relief because defenses knew, like, cover Andries on third and nine because that's where they're going. He's going to be the number three or four option at Texas. And he's not going to get doubled ever. Right? At Cal, yeah. he would legitimately get like a safety and a linebacker on him on third and six. So I think he's going to feel free. He also 9 of 12 on contested catches.
Awesome.
So he has flypaper hands and he takes the ball from people. Like, he doesn't wait for the ball. He doesn't like fade away as the ball's coming to him. You know, he grabs and snatches the ball even while someone's draped on him. So that's a really valuable asset.
Yeah, 1,000%. All right, let's talk Jordan Washington next, then we'll do Winston. Jordan Washington, exciting athlete. I had clips from whenever we had media availability, and they were trying to work his blocking. It's not great technique yet, but Jeff Banks, every time he would mess it up, Banks would be, again, which means that they're trying to get him ready, you know? When a coach is coaching you that hard, there's a reason. So Jordan Washington, special receiving ability. This is my knock with Texas. And this is going to sound backwards, but listen to my logic. I'd almost rather have a blocking tight end that I teach to be a receiver. And you're not going to teach them to have Washington's athleticism or his height. I'm not doing that. But you can scheme that position on split action bluffs, like Jeremiah Hall, how we'll talk about with Emory Winston. That's the big thing that I like blockers first, and then like Ben Sinnott at Kansas State. And then you teach them to receive, because it just seems so much harder to take these receiver types and teach them to block functionally. You can teach them to stand in front of people. You can teach them to do that. But as far as that walk-on level driving people, it's tougher. So Washington's going to have to improve in the blocking game. But, man, Sanders and Helm weren't all-world blockers, and we made it work.
Yeah, and the complete tight end is very rare in college football.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jeff Swaim is what you're describing, and there's not a lot of those. You know, yeah. Blocker first, but can catch the ball capably, right? Enough to play like 10 years in the NFL, right?
I just love Sark scheming. I know he'll be able to get that fullback open. And that's the only reason. In a regular offense, go with the receiving tight end.
Yeah, I like Jordan Washington a lot. He's put on a ton of weight, in good weight. He's got a huge frame. He's long. He's got 10.5-inch hands, which is crazy. So when he grabs the ball, it's staying in his hands. It's not getting plucked out by a little DB. I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to be the guy that we go with when we go to 12 personnel. People are saying, hey, we've seemed to have our strength at wide receiver. We do like Andries, so let's go 11. Why go 12? Sark loves the matchups in 12, and he feels like he can dictate coverages. You can get teams to take their nickel off the field. And that's where he likes to take his sort of max protect deep shots, 12. He's always loved to do that. Hey, let's take our shot down the field. And he's got the two tight ends out flanking to sort of widen the front and also take care of any blitzers, right? Yeah. So we're going to see him. But I don't know if you want to talk about him yet, but we've got Emory Winston also potentially pushing for a role in that as a kind of a classic old school H-back.
So this is my style. This is what I like. He was able to show off in the spring, and they were just saying, this is my eyes light up when I hear it, when they're like, he's just always in the right spot. He's finding space. I'm like, this is the style of tight end play that I think is really deadly. And we're hearing that about Winston.
Yeah. And the thing about Winston is his different body type. So we have several things in our offense where the tight end is expected to lead, like as a fullback from the backfield, right? as a move tight end. They're not just screening someone on the edge or trying to get leak out on a safety or a corner. We're actually asking, hey, you're going up there like an ISO and you're trying to take out the linebacker.
Yeah, you have to insert. Yeah.
When you're inserted and you're 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", it's very hard to get leverage on a 6'2", 240-pound linebacker who's used to playing really low and taking on guards, right? Mm-hmm. Emory is a very different body type. He's 6 feet, 6'1". He can get leverage on the linebacker, and he's 230. So he can be basically like an old-school fullback. But he's got the athleticism that when he leaks out into the flat, he's a better athlete than the linebacker covering him. And that has huge value. So Texas fans, you know that OU has terrorized us with this kind of guy. JD Runnels, Jeremiah Hall. Oklahoma State had guys like this. Kansas had a guy like that. You remember him? The Jared Casey.
Casey, yeah.
Like 6 feet, 260. So he could play kind of fullback. He could play tight end. You know, he could catch the ball well enough. Right. And so that is an asset that we have not had under Sark. And now we do. And I think he went out and got that guy purposely because he thinks it's a missing attribute of the offense. And he knows that that guy will be very helpful for us in the red zone. Lead blocking, also slipping out into the flat and being that forgotten guy that was just standing by himself in the paint. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to need him on counter. I mean, that's the big thing, too. We're going to run a lot of counter. And so if you don't want to run, you
better have a guy who can lead.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's my big thing. And like, you know, I like the 6'6 tight end, whatever. It's the leverage is not there. Their arms are so long too. You're like, well, long arms is good. They can block. Tight ends almost never lock out. They end up getting their arms like imploded back into them because the guys are stronger.
Well, the length is good when you're on the edge.
Right.
You can test an edge.
Right.
It does not. Your height is a disadvantage when you're running up inside the guard and center. Yep. And a little squatty 6 foot, 240 pound middle linebacker comes up and just pops you and staggers you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's when you want that 6 foot, 6'1" squatty dude who can stagger him back.
For sure. Next up, we got Nick Townsend, who came in the summer. He was running track in high school, which shows you right there. He was running track. And then in high school, man, he would play edge, tight end. He's all the NFL measurables are there. He's going to be your most athletic tight end, blend of size, speed. And Eric loves him, man. Even before we got Townsend, it was between like Townsend, Kiadi Armstrong, who went to A&M. Eric was like, I'm telling you guys, Nick, we don't care about anyone besides Nick Townsend. So Eric is very excited for him too. That's his favorite out of that class. So I think he's going to be an absolute star. I don't know about this year, but going forward, everyone's going to know that name eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, Connor. I was kind of bummed out about our tight end room a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Not the frontline starter. That's been good. But what's coming up? And we haven't really recruited or developed the position super well.
Frankly, yeah.
That's all changed. The last 2 years, there's no position I'm happier about. And I think we're going to have a good tight end room this year. I think it's going to be better next year.
I agree. And
it's going to be better the year after. So I think we're going to want to be in 12 personnel, a lot. People will be clamoring for it. And guys like Townsend are the reason why. 10-900 meter guy at 230, 235. He was as good as an edge and a linebacker as he was as a tight end. And defensive guys who want to hit and like hurt people, they're more likely to also want to be blockers.
Correct.
So Townsend, I think, is really exciting. He did not come in early. He's one of the few guys who was not an early enrollee. So he's kind of playing catch up. And so that's going to put him behind Jordan Washington and Winston. But I think the future is really bright with that guy. Like, I can't wait for 2026 in this tight end room.
For sure. And then quickly, we got Spencer Shannon, who's that 6'7" inline tight end, who's just really hasn't put it together. So that's going to be kind of the big thing with him. He's down the depth chart. I think Paul has him as the fifth tight end. And like we said, that height is good if you can catch, but 6'7", man, that's an awkward kind of position. And I remember last spring, Ian did a little breakdown on his blocking, and that wasn't, you know, close to being there yet either. A little bit of baby deer syndrome at 6'7". We just want to see what's going on going forward.
He's finally over 250.
Yeah.
And so my recommendation for him from the beginning was like, drive your weight up to 265, 270.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly and accept your role as a blocking tight end. And then use that length and your better footwork as a 270-pound, 6'7 guy. And now we can go do some real damage in pass pro or even just putting your hand down and driving someone off the ball. He's still in that no man's land where he's not athletic enough to be a real receiving threat, but he's not strong and powerful enough to be a blocking threat. So how are you going to get on the field other than, you know, field goals?
Yeah. And once again, that spring tape was not from this spring. We didn't have a spring game. So things can change a lot. And I would love for him to be rising through the ranks.
His weight has finally gone over 250, right? He's been at 240 forever. He might show up in August, like 265. Who knows?
Well, in 12 personnel, they're going to have to play around, right? He's not your 11 personnel tight end, but we can see what goes on in 12. And then finally, we have Will Randall. So, Arch's friend. And so that was his number one target at Isidore Newman. I was excited for him because I thought, if anyone, he's the closest to a walk-on mentality, you know? So I was hoping he would rise. I think Paul has him listed here at 236. That's still light. He played edge for Isidore, too. But
he has great hands. You know, it's weird. The roster listed him at 6'6". Did he have a crazy growth spurt here, or is that?
Yeah, I didn't even mention your 6'6" because it just inherently felt wrong to me. But maybe he is. To me, he was like a 6'3" H-backy looking guy.
That's what he always thought he was too. But you know, people do grow, and you know, the Dennis Rodmans of the world exist, right? You're 20 years old working in an airport, and then all of a sudden you're 6'6" the next day.
Yeah.
I don't see a role for him, but I don't know. He just apparently grew to 6'6". So I don't know.
Send him to Dagestan 2 to 3 years and forget. That's the trick. If you want to teach tight ends grappling, that's number one.
That's true.
All right, Paul, we got through all the weapons for Arch, which are going to be important, right? Because not only do we think Arch is going to elevate the option or the offense, everybody else has to elevate with Arch as well. We think that'll happen. We're going a little over, Paul, but let's hit these Phil steals quickly.
Sure.
And then we can kind of see what's going on in the SEC with other players. So, Paul, give us a short synopsis on, you know, Phil Steele, what he was known for, and how there might not – the quality control seems to be dropping for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, so Phil Steele was one of the rags that I always bought, one of the previews I always bought, because I kind of looked askance at Lindy's and Athlon, or Street and Smith's, if you're old school. And I think there was a kind of a golden age for Phil Steele. And I think a lot of his preview was driven by some of his staff. I know that some of that staff left over the years. And I noticed the quality starting to decline because I used to use it to inform my preview.
Yeah.
And then I realized it wasn't a reliable source because I kept finding mistakes.
Well, that's what's scary. Whenever you're like reading a preview on Georgia, right? We don't know that roster as well. And yes. So, but then you read the Texas preview and you're like, a lot of this is wrong. So how can I trust
that guy's not good or he's not?
Yeah. How can I trust the Georgia preview now? And it skews the whole thing whenever you notice things getting wrong about Texas.
Well, and I'll give you an example. And anyone can make a depth chart error in isolation, but he had Xavier Filsame starting for us on defense and Kalik Lockett starting for us outside.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not right. I mean,
it's not even close to right. Yeah.
But the problem is he also, in terms of ranking these all SEC teams, the hierarchies are just wrong. Like, so quarterback, a lot of this is opinion. We can go through that. I don't care. Like, people could make their
case. Fair enough. You mentioned good quarterbacks.
Yeah. You could make your mention for Diego Pavia, right? If you're not worried about pro traits, if you're just trying to get two more wins or three more wins. But go on down a little bit.
No Lagway is interesting, though. You mentioned no Lagway.
Lack of Lagway doesn't make sense. Like, if you have the balls to project Arch, why wouldn't you project Lagway?
Right.
Running back? Hey, I love Trey Wisner as much as anybody. No. I mean, he's not one of the two best.
They're messing up production in Sark's system. This is a big thing, right? You'll hear, well, you know, Trey's a 1,000-yard rusher. So is every rusher in Sark's offense. If everyone is the 1,000-yard rusher, you start to have to wonder, is there a schematic emphasis here? And as long as you have the minimum threshold ability, which of course Trey does, it seems like you're going to get 1,000 yards. It doesn't necessarily mean elite runner.
On a per carry basis, Connor, he's the lowest, 4.7 yards per carry is the lowest of any Texas lead back since 2017 with Daniel Young.
Yeah, and Daniel Young was a fourth. He was a fourth stringer, right?
He rushed for about 400 yards. And that 2017 offense, if y'all recall, was a disaster. So,
and the yards after contact per attempt is really bad too.
I'm just trying to provide some context, not be down on a great Longhorn who stepped up when we needed him. But the other thing, Jaden Baugh is one of the best two or three running backs in the SEC, and he's not listed in the top eight.
This makes me mad because Ahmad Hardy was from ULM. He was their running back when we played him. I told everyone we needed to poach Ahmad Hardy. I got a lot of, come on, man, that's ULM. Yeah, and I was like, guys, look at him. He's not going to be at ULM. He's a great-looking back. He goes to Missouri. Now he's getting ranked as, you know, a second-teamer. So that was a thing that bothered me, too.
I'll give you another one. They list here Mississippi State's Devon Booth. He's going to split the job with Fluff Bothwell, who
– hell of a name.
True freshman, was basically a star for South Alabama, and he immediately got snapped up by Mississippi State. There's good guys at running back at the lower levels, and they're cheap. And that's one of the things that distinguishes that position.
That's why I'm on down Hardy. The receiver,
if you don't mind.
I do not mind.
Thank you, sir. You're a gentleman.
Ryan Williams sucks. Cam Coleman sucks.
I'm cool with his first team.
Yeah, that's
all. He's got Wingo on the second team. Cool. Singleton, great for Auburn. Doesn't have DeAndre Moore, which I think will be a mistake. He lists Zachariah Branch, the big USC guy to Georgia. Yeah. Hey, USC wasn't sad to see him go. The fact is he's a great athlete who's not a great receiver. So maybe Georgia helps him put it together. Phil Steele for not knowing this or listing it, but know the name Dallas Wilson for Florida.
For Florida, yeah. He was supposed to go to Oregon, wasn't he? Dallas Wilson originally, and then he switched over. And Kevin Coleman, that's Mississippi State's Kevin Coleman that he went to Mizzou. I didn't even know that.
That's right. Yeah. So remember, went to A&M and Kevin Coleman went to Mizzou.
Okay. Makes sense. Because Kevin Coleman, remember in the recruiting battles, we wanted Kevin Coleman.
Yeah. He's good.
Yeah. And so that's interesting. I didn't know he went to Mizzou.
Tight end.
So, Deion Burks.
Yeah. The receiver, it's fine. I mean, you're not going to mess this up too much if you can read stats, right?
Well, also, these quarterback, wide receiver, those are the easiest to project for most fans. It's easier to read. All right, tight ends.
Yards, touchdowns.
Yeah, and wow, he's fast.
That's right. Stowers is the obvious choice. First team, good job.
Yeah.
Has Jack Andrews there at the second team. One thing to note, Ole Miss and Georgia probably have the two best tight end rooms. Ole Miss has two good guys. One of them is a guy, Luke Haas from Arkansas.
He's
Daquan Wright. Georgia has Lawson Lucky and Oscar Dell. And they're both going to play in the NFL. So
they showed up last year versus us in game one, too.
They hurt Texas. Bad. Center, he does fine here. He messes up. The best center in the country is Jake Slaughter. It's not
close. Slaughter is a projected first round pick as a center.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you mess this up, but whatever.
And Brailsford is fun to watch, but he's undersized.
He's good. Yeah, but he's 280.
Yeah.
He can't move people in the run game. This really irritated me. This is the top. He mixed the guards and tackles for some reason. I don't know why. But
he separated. You pointed out he separated center. It doesn't make any sense. A center and a guard are the same thing. One snaps. The tackle is a different one.
In any event, the top 16 guards and tackles in the SEC, there's no Trevor Goosby.
Yeah.
That's not good. They have Fernando Carmona from Arkansas. Mm-hmm. He was an above replacement level tackle at Arkansas. Now he's going to be a guard. He's not one of the best five or best four offensive linemen in the SEC. That's crazy. The absence of Goosby is really weird. Reed Adams is the best offensive lineman on A&M's team. And he has him listed as the third best offensive lineman.
That's because Bisonitis is one of those names that gets mentioned a lot and therefore must go ahead of him, apparently.
I guess.
They do that all the time. It's like name recognition over actual play.
Yeah. So that's not great. And then...
But what we do need to point out is Texas A&M has 1, 2, 3
yes.
offensive linemen on here. This is concerning. So I was looking at A&M, and Marcel Reed, he still needs to be able to read on the offense and quit trying to rely on his run. But they're going to return Moss at running back. That's really important. They're going to have Nye Black from us at tight end. If he can figure it out, he's a good athlete. They're returning, what, 4 or 5 offensive linemen. 3 of those are listed in the top of the SEC. They yep. bring Concepcion, who was also mentioned here, who had an off year, but looks, if you watch their spring game, was an important aspect. They have Terry Bussey, which was the former 5-star athlete that we were after. And then they brought in Craver, who's super fast from Mississippi State. Unfortunately, I hate to report, this Texas A&M offense could be really good if they figure it out.
They may be one of the few teams that could try to bully us.
Yeah.
And just run the ball and run lots of like jet sweep, like true Colin Klein offense.
Yeah.
Because Marcel Reed is quick. Decision making, but the dude can scamper. I love Moss. I think he's a good player. I hope he's back healthy. And then they got Craver over the top, right? Scaring you. And they got Bussey and Concepcion running all sorts of crazy jet action and screen action off of the run game. All that Kansas State stuff that drives you crazy. And then they got the offensive line to deliver. So A&M, I regret to inform you, as Connor said, they might be pretty good on offense. We'll see.
Yeah.
So notice these were your final. OU offensive linemen, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, notice that. But yeah, that's the big thing. So there's just notable omissions here. And I'll rankings tell you what,
I just, aren't great. I just finished writing the Phil Steele defense. All SEC, it's much worse.
It's much worse.
Oh, it's much worse.
Yeah.
Like, they just randomly take random linebackers from the SEC and just put them on the team. Like, there's a guy at Vanderbilt. I had to, like, look at the name twice because I was like, I'm familiar with this guy. He's, like, the 8th best defender on Vanderbilt. And they put him, like, second team all SEC.
So, like, what I learned when I started focusing on, you know, learning everything about Texas, I learned how hard it is to know one team in and out. Yeah. And it made me incredibly suspicious of every national guy that, like, are going to rank every team in the nation. You just can't do it well. And it's hard enough to do it with the one team. It's super hard to do with the SEC. Anytime someone is ranking every team in college football, man, grain of salt, there's no way you can have that read. And like I said, what's really tricky, right, when we do preseasons, like even trying to get good information on San Jose State can be tough.
You got to know who's actually oversells everything. And then there's a smaller minority of people who are like Eeyores about their team on everything, and you kind of got to balance that. There's not as many of those, but you figure out who's credible and who's not. That's why I kind of keep my focus narrow of like Texas opponents, SEC. That's going to be my wheelhouse.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to know that cold. I'm going to build up institutional knowledge. And then I'm not going to try to get more ambitious than that.
For sure. And if you want the best preview, where Paul does break down the SEC and this team at a very high level, get this preview instead, guys. This is you're going to know your opponents well, including our preseason opponents.
These are what the little team capsules look like.
Yep. It's awesome stuff. All right. We went a little long today, but I enjoyed it.
Thanks, $1. I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. $1 until 8:30, guys. I'm to Ohio State. New members. If you're in the chat and you're not on the board, what are you doing, guys? Come on, man. There's way more information over on the board, as well as a fun community of smart fans, funny fans, and none of the typical message board nonsense goes unchecked. Everybody there is, we do a good job of policing the board to make sure educated fans feel very welcome amongst us.
Speaking of policing, sir, we've got 2 super chats we need to address before we sign out.
Let's do it. Ooh, I didn't even see these. Good. Before we wrap, Paul's thoughts on Josie at OU. By the way, go on the board because Ian has an article right now about the ongoing coup going on at OU. Ian, I think he had this pre-written by how fast he got it up. Ian cannot – it's like Christmas right now for Ian.
Well, Ian and I have been following this closely, and I've got quite a bit on this actually in the Thinking Texas Football preview. It's all happening. It's amazing. I already wrote this stuff, and it's exactly following it. It's about kind of a coup. An O coup that Randall Stephenson, if you guys don't know, former chairman of AT&T, drove them into the ground after driving the Boy Scouts of America into the ground, if you know anything about that. This guy's really great. He destroys everything he touches. But he is basically kind of taking over OU football. And he's the one responsible for setting up the GM role, which doesn't report to Venables. He and the GM were the guys that basically hired Arbuckle. Venables just was sort of told, this is who you're hiring since you blew the Luttrell thing. Venables is the DC of OU.
Yep.
And he's like an energy guy and like.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a rah-rah guy and a defensive coordinator.
But they've got everything kind of sliced up. And the latest thing was to get Joe Castiglione out, who's the longtime director at OU, the athletic director since what, 98? Something like that.
It's been forever.
In the 90s.
He got him out of debt. He really turned him around, too.
Yeah. So Castiglione is out. He's 67 years old, probably looking forward to retirement. I think he, was pretty good at what he did and was instrumental in Texas and OU both going to the SEC.
For sure.
In concert with CDC. He was a good partner in that regard. So the sense is this is Randall Stephenson's last barrier to power. And he kind of, they might have encouraged Ghost Joe to, read the writing on the wall and how that out. He's going to continue to be the AD for the remainder of this year. But it's going to be a very interesting development. I mean, Randall Stephenson's going to pick the next AD. Okay. So that's the reality of the power structure now. And Stephenson doesn't have a great record with other organizations. I mean, I was not being facetious when I said he really screwed up AT&T. You can go read about that adventure. And he really screwed up the Boy Scouts of America, which the effect of actually impacted my son. So interesting guy. And interestingly, he only has a master's from OU. His BA is from Central Oklahoma.
Okay.
And he just seems like one of these guys who sort of fails upward that you run into occasionally in the professional world.
Steve Patterson.
Yeah, and we'll see if he has a similar effect on OU football. There's a lot of parallels. Look, part of this is I know we're gloating because we're Texas fans and all that, but we also see ourselves in some of this.
Yeah, and we know what it feels like.
Well, and we kind of know what it looks like. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing that's going on because OU was always pretty damn competent, particularly when Bob Stoops was running the show. So
that's what made them good is they made strong decisions. Here's the thing too, right? Like, Venables gets fired. You go after a Dillingham, maybe a J.G. Kinney, maybe a Shane Beamer. But do any of these guys want to go into that structure where you have a GM who's not reporting to you, which means that – and that's your talent acquisition guy. So that means you're really answering to him. He's telling you who's on your roster. This is much more of an NFL style. So
he's telling you what offense you're running.
Exactly. What coordinators you're hiring, and so this is much more of an NFL style, and college coaches are notoriously control freaks. That's why they like college. They were controlling everything. So they're talking about all these big names that could come after Venables. But if I'm Dillingham, like, why would I take a job like that where I'm being told what to do with a model that's not proven? Keep in mind, it might work, but this is innovative stuff. I'm paying attention to it, but we don't know that this model works at this level either. So I wish them all the bad. I wish them all the bad luck, and I hope they make the wrong hire again. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I it's going to be interesting. And one thing about OU, they've had good coaching hires for the most part, right?
Yeah.
They haven't really hired a head coach externally. They've done one, like in the last 50 years. So all their other coaches were assistants. And even Venables was a former assistant that they brought back home, right? So have they ever demonstrated competency in a pure coaching hire? Texas certainly has not. thank God we stumbled on Sark. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. There's no obvious Bob Stoops out there, right?
Yeah.
This hotshot coordinator everyone knows is going to be a great head coach. I don't see that guy.
I don't want to talk about this. I just like the ominous nature of this comment. You can't run from the shoe on what's going to happen August 30th. Ooh. You can talk all you want, but judgment day is upon us. I'm like, he's just sitting in a hood in a dark room. Just like, I just love how
7 weeks away.
Yeah, how foreboding it was. He's just like, you cannot run from Ohio State. All right, Homer and Paul, do you think Texas will start being more aggressive with portal running backs in the future? How does it work out this year?
I mean, Tashaar Choice was not going to do it.
Yeah.
He was going to take two running backs every year. Homer was not going to like them. And
yeah, I love to. That was the weirdest mix of I love the coach, I don't love the style of running back he takes. I love Stan Drayton. I thought Stan Drayton had the sickest run of pulling in running backs. I love Tashaar Choice. Don't get me wrong. I just that style of running back doesn't always really do it for me. I don't care if they're a 5-star kind of thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're looking for portal efficiencies, in other words, talent versus cost. Running back is your best value.
100%. You can go to the lower leagues and get a guy who's day one ready. It scales almost better than any position.
Cam Scadaboo, Cody Schrader at Missouri. If you guys have forgotten that guy, he led the SEC in rushing, and he was playing at like scrub state. Scadaboo obviously had his beginnings at pretty modest beginnings. There's so many of those guys, and a lot of people don't even realize it. They're like, oh,
that Ahmad Hardy.
Hardy, yes, you love Hardy.
He's good.
He's good. So the point is you can find those guys everywhere. Not to mention, why didn't someone make a run at like Nick Singleton for Penn State?
Yeah.
Was it just written that they were going to get both running backs to return again?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, but I would have taken a shot at him. I would have taken a shot at Jaden Ott, to tell you the truth. I thought OU did a good job with that pickup.
Yeah, man. It's just like we've seen, man, if you can maximize this, back to my theory that running backs are becoming more important, and I'll bring it up every time. But, man, if you have a bad team and an elite running back, it means nothing. But if you have an elite team and then add an elite running back on top of that, man, that can put you over the top. And so that's the big thing too, right? So that's why whenever you're close, go for the running back. If you're not close, I don't care about picking up a running back.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Because I was going to say – you're talking about the importance of a running back. I was like, well, that kind of goes against the salary info we just talked about, but I think you nailed it. If your team is complete and you need that one extra kick, man, a great running back absolutely helps you. And the truth is the lower the level of football, the more a running back can dominate. So, you know, the NFL, it's kind of hard for a running back to dominate. Someone's going to like throw up Saquon Barkley clips or something, but you know, the quarterback's still more important. The wide receiver, elite, that's more important. The lower you go in football, even college, high school, junior high, believe me, I saw it in my son's fifth grade team. You got one running back who could break tackles and run. It's like, God help you.
Yeah. All right, chat. Thank you, guys. Paul, thank you. It was a fun day. So Ian is on vacation, guys.
Oh, no.
He's not going to be on the live tomorrow. Instead, I'm going to have a couple of guests, and we're just going to talk football, more conversational. I have a good time. Ian will be doing the deep dive this week. Don't worry about that, guys. But as far as the morning lives, Ian will not be on tomorrow or Thursday, but I will be here. And you guys don't even care about Ian anyways. You're here for me regardless, right, guys? So don't even worry about that. But we're going to have a couple of guests on tomorrow, and make sure you guys show up because it's going to be very conversational, and would love to hear your thoughts on Texas football, y'all.
Yeah, y'all come join HomerCast.
Yeah. And not. I was going to say Inside Texas Football, but I've almost flipped it to, Inside Texas Homer, which is not a good way to phrase that. All right, chat. Thank you very much. Paul, thank you as well. Y'all have a wonderful Tuesday. Peace.